Welcome to Traveling Culturati, where we explore cultures and share travel news, travel tips, destinations, and travel chats. Visit TravelingCulturati.com for more information.
Well, hey there, fellow Culturati. Javon Harley here, your host and travel pro for Traveling Culturati. Thanks for coming back for another week of travel news, travel tips, and travel chats. And before we go any further, make sure you sign up for the travel club so that you can go with. We have Japan coming up in May of 24. We have Peru, wonderful Peru, coming up in August of 24. And we have a ton of other things planned for 24 and 25. Yes, we're already planning for 2025. It's not that far away. I swear, I think somebody has their finger on the fast forward button of the calendar year because, yeah, here we are already marching along in the new year. Well, chatting with me today is Rekima Glimpf, a travel and wellness consultant who has hosted wellness retreats worldwide. Everyone's talking about the high levels of stress and the need for self-care. Basically, we're not okay. So I'm not laughing at that, but we're just not okay. So buckle up for tips and information on how to plan and get the most out of a wellness trip. We'll also have Javon's Travel Minute and the Culture Report. But, we always start with a little travel news, and have I got some news for you? Have you ever thought about the dirtiest and the cleanest parts of an airplane? I think we all started thinking about germs post-pandemic or during the pandemic. But there was a study that was done to determine what were the dirtiest and cleanest parts of an airplane. And you'd be surprised by some of those things. And some of the things you thought were the dirtiest aren't necessarily the dirtiest. And some of the things you thought may have been the cleanest aren't necessarily the cleanest. So here we go. Do you know that more than 45,000 flights every day and 2.9 million passengers fly in and out of the United States airports? In the short time between flights, cabin cleaning crews, you see them coming in sometimes. I've seen them come in sometimes as we're exiting the plane, and they come in to tidy up. Yeah, not clean, but to tidy up. But understanding that moving hundreds of people between airplanes on tight schedules really doesn't leave them a lot of time to do a deep, thorough cleaning. Now, some travelers may think that sitting on a plane is a surefire way to spread germs. And some of us are still wearing our masks, but I do look at people with suspect, I certainly do. So let's talk about it. Let's first talk about how does the air filtration system work? Well, the systems use what's called high quality filters that are made up of clusters of fibers that filter out pathogens, or AKA germs, when air is forced through them. Now, they also nab dust, pollen, mold, and other particles that could cause irritation or illness. The system is surprisingly effective, managing to filter at least, get this, 99.97% of particles with a size of 0.3 microns. That's about 1,000th of a millimeter. Now, this is considered the most penetrable size of a particle. Air is forced out from ducts in the ceiling and sucked back in through ducts where the cabin meets the floor. So some of the air is refiltered through the HEPA system, but about half of it is pumped back outside so new air can be brought in. Yes. So which parts of the planes are the dirtiest? Common sense would suggest that the dirtiest areas of an airplane cabin are the highest touch points. Same with hotel rooms. Think about everything that people touch, high touch points. That certainly does give us accurate and correct information. In various cabin tests, many items were swabbed and analyzed with some unsurprising results, like the seatback tray. Bathroom door handles and bathroom sink tab handles were discovered to be the dirtiest parts of an airplane cabin, with traces of bacteria, yeast, and mold were present. Now, arm and headrests are also often found to contain E. coli and staph. And airline blankets and pillows, unless they were sealed in plastic, are also regular offenders. Now, seat belt buckles, air vent nozzles, and the seat back pockets were also determined to have high bacterial content. And that certainly does make sense. These are also high touch points, but they may not receive the same level of cleaning as the lavatory. So while the cabin cleaning crew makes sure to empty seat back pockets of trash when possible, it doesn't receive any additional cleaning that the other surfaces get. Microbiologist Jason Tetro advises travelers to wipe down those surfaces before they touch them and apply alcohol-based hand sanitizer after touching these germy surfaces. So, you know, United Airlines still hands out those alcohol wipes, and that's the first thing I do is I wipe down my seat, I wipe down the buckle and the armrests immediately, and the tray table. So which are the parts of the plane that are the cleanest? Well, some of the cabin's high touch points receive more attention than others when it comes to cleaning. Case in point is the toilet flusher, you know, that flush button you have to push. Studies have found flushers to be among the cleanest parts of an airplane cabin. An executive with Charm Sciences, who manufactures a rapid diagnostic test that has been used to detect airplane cleanliness, suggested in an interview with the Washington Post that the few flushers on board were likely to be an area of focus in disinfecting, unlike the many trays and air nozzles. So the instruction card found in the seat back pocket may have been counted amongst the dirtiest parts of a plane, according to flight attendants. But beyond the anecdotal evidence, the Washington Post report actually found it to be the cleanest when swabbed. They might not be included in the flight crew's cleanup, but it's likely that they're not being handled too much in the first place. Yeah. So high touch points that are considered to be the dirtiest sometimes are the cleanest because they are cleaned more often and more thoroughly and disinfected, where other high touch points may not be cleaned as often, or some lesser touch points may not be cleaned as often. So you get the drift? So how often are airplane cabins getting a deep clean? Well, it might surprise you to learn that there are no regulations around the cleanliness of airplane cabins. No mandates on that. Each airline determines its own protocols and cleaning schedules, but they typically all follow the same industry standards, which is what they call a turn clean for domestic or shorter flights that typically have a faster turnaround time before the next flight. Flight attendants who spoke to CBS said that crews typically have less than 15 minutes to clean. This time is spent doing a more superficial clean, often focusing on removing trash, cleaning the gallery, where staff prepare food and drinks, and checking lavatories. That leaves little time to wipe down those high-touch surfaces. So a deep clean is the most often done overnight. And though it will vary by airline, usually takes place anytime a plane is sitting for 8 hours or more. These procedures focus more on the passenger seating areas, as well as the lavatory, galley, and storage areas. So probably that first flight out in the morning is going to be the cleanest, and the last flight of the day is going to be the not so cleanest. There was another study done on what happens on the plane and in the air, and it has a lot to do with cocktails. What are the best cocktails to drink on the plane, according to science? Well, you know, your taste buds change when you're in the air because airplane, the cabin pressure, the air that we just talked about on what's the cleanest and what's the dirtiest is very drying. And when your taste buds are dried out, it changes your taste buds. So they are less sensitive, so things may not taste as seasoned as they are. So what drinks will really stand up to that change in your taste buds? Which ones are going to maintain their taste or have a higher taste profile? One of which is a Bloody Mary. Yeah. You know what? I used to drink Bloody Marys on plays. I haven't done that in a long time. But that Bloody Mary mix, because it is so heavily seasoned and salty, is one reason that it stands up. For the same reason, a Moscow Mule would be a nice cocktail on board where you can still get its full effects taste-wise and otherwise because of the ginger beer and its strong taste. Mimosas, orange juice has a strong taste, and champagne has proven to stand up to taste on board an aircraft. However, the longer the flight, the duller your taste buds will become. So a glass of champagne may taste very nice initially, but by the end, it may taste very different. Margaritas, you know, again, anything with those strong taste profiles. Wine is also good because, again, it does have a bit of a strong taste and will stand up to those muted taste buds that you may have. Now, what about those non-alcoholic drinks that will stand up, like your sodas, soda waters, anything with lemon and lime will stand up to that cabin environment that will dull your taste buds and your senses? But I do want to say that it's super, super important that you stay hydrated, especially if you're drinking alcohol, because for every alcoholic beverage, you need to add another glass of water. Yeah. Now, there are some issues and travel warnings for Mexico ahead of spring break. Yeah, we're talking about spring break already. And the warning is asking travelers to travel smart and to be informed. The United States is warning travelers heading to Mexico to be aware of their surroundings ahead of spring break holiday season. The warning, which was issued this past week by the U.S. Embassy and consulates in Mexico, reminds travelers to travel smart and to be informed. The embassy continued that while the vast majority travel safely, visitors should be aware of issues with crime, drugs, unregulated alcohol, drownings, and more. The embassy warned that crime, including violent crime, can occur anywhere in Mexico, including a popular tourist destination. Travelers should maintain a high level of situational awareness to avoid areas where illicit activities occur and promptly depart from potentially dangerous situations. U.S. citizens should exercise increased caution in the downtown areas of popular spring break locations, including Cancun, Playa del Carmen, and Tulum, especially after dark. The warning also reminded American travelers that drug possession and use is illegal in Mexico, including medical marijuana. It also advised that unregulated alcohol may be contaminated, that counterfeit medication is common, and that guns are illegal in Mexico. The U.S. Embassy and consulates in Mexico issued a similar spring break warning last year. So travelers can view current travel advisories on the State Department's website at travel.state.gov. Well, that's all I've got for travel news. And when I come back, I'm chatting with Rikima Glimpf, and she's going to share travel tips and information on planning and getting the most out of wellness travel.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you head on over to the website, travelingculturati.com, and make sure you join the travel club so that you can travel with us to some fantastic places and you can meet some wonderful people.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
We all have a packing list, but there are some unconventional things that we should consider to help us out in a pinch. Things like Ziploc bags, small and large, to protect against spills, and wet bathing suits. Duct tape for mishaps, especially with luggage. Safety pins for rips and tears or low-cut blouses. Extension cord because the electrical socket always seems to be on the other side of the room. A laundry bag. You definitely want to keep your dirty clothes from your clean clothes. Face cleansing cloths. Now, the hotel may not have face cloths, or their detergent may be too harsh for your skin. Shoe bags. Just think of what you walk on the streets of just about anywhere. Slippers. Just in case the hotel doesn't have them, you certainly don't want to walk barefoot on their floors. A hat or a head wrap for those days when your hair just isn't cooperating. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. Yeah, I think a lot of things have changed with us over the past several years, and I think you kind of know what I'm talking about, but I think it has made us look inward and look more for how we can be better to ourselves, talking about wellness. And joining me today is Rekima Glimpf, a travel and wellness consultant who has hosted wellness retreats all over the world. Well, hello, Rekima, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hi, Javon. Thank you so much for having me here. Super excited to have this conversation.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure to chat with you as well. So wellness travel is a growing trend, and it started a few years ago as far as on its path of getting a lot more traction. And it's certainly continuing today, and I think will do so for the years to come. Why do you think this is so?
Well, I think because people have decided that this is the era of I. This is the era of me, right? We are coming out of an experience where COVID had us all rattled. People lost folks. People were, for the first time, having to reflect on their lives and having to make decisions about whether or not if life would continue to go on or if they might get struck with a thing. And so maybe they would lose their own lives. And I think coming out of such a traumatic experience, in addition to all of the strife that's going on around us, I think people are at a place where they're like, you know what? Tomorrow's not promised. I don't know what to expect about the future. What I know is what I have right now. And what I have right now is I want to cherish every day that I'm here. I want to experience the world the way that I want to experience it. And I want to pour into me, right? I want to pour into my family. I want to pour into me. And so I actually think that there has been a psychological shift that started permeating right before COVID happened, but certainly through COVID and even post the pandemic at this point, where folks have said, you know what, this is radical. Radical joy looks like me deciding to go do the things that used to be considered bucket list items. I'm no longer waiting for the bucket list. I want that today. I want that in the near future. And I want to be getting on that as soon as possible. So I think that those are some of the reasons why we're starting to see a shift in both the attitude towards travel, but then also, you know, the attitude towards how we all show up in the world, how we're waking up. Like, what is motivating us? What's inspiring us? And what's given us, I think, that hurry up, or that angst about living in the here and now?
Absolutely. And, you know, they say that the things that people regret the most are the things they didn't do when our day comes, right? And I remember my mother always saying, you know, use the good china. We would have people over for just a casual dinner, and they would often say, oh, you're pulling out all the good stuff. She's like, well, you know, I have it. Why am I not using it just to have sit in the cabinet and look pretty, but never to touch it? I mean, what do you have
that's
it
right,
for?
That's right. And, so, and we're seeing a lot of that same attitude, right? People are like, listen, let me get rid of things that I don't need and that don't serve me today. Let me get the things that are going to bring me ultimate joy today. And let me do it. Let me have a sense of urgency, and not urgency like stressing myself out, got to do it tomorrow. I mean, some of us operate like that. I'm saying some of us because I tend to operate that way. But it is like, let me do it though. Let me not put that on a vision board that I never get to, right? Like, let me not make it look pretty and say all the things that I dream about. I want to keep dreaming, but I want to now actualize those things because I don't know if I'm going to get to a place where those things will actually become reality if I wait, because the world looks so uncertain to everybody, right? And so I do think that that's playing a major role in what's going on right now.
Quality of life is so important. And I live by that too. Now, I'm not saying that you have to completely ignore responsibilities and,
<That's right>.
and planning for a future, but that's certainly right. Don't put all of your eggs into one basket. We're not saying that you have to spend everything and not
that's
plan,
right. That's right.
But also you don't want to save everything and not enjoy life. It's that work-life balance that we all have to have.
That's right.
So what is meant by wellness travel? What does that really mean?
You just had said something about it doesn't mean we're propagating for you to go and spend everything in the here and now. But what it does mean is that whatever you need today is what we want to see you doing. Whatever I need today is what I'm going to do. That's essentially what we mean when we start to talk about wellness. What's going to have me feeling well today? What is going to have me feeling like I'm at my best today? And does that look like travel? And so if travel becomes a thing that's going to make me feel better, the thing that's going to help me pour into myself, the thing that's going to allow for me to continue to work on those 8 pillars of wellness, right? Whether it be my educational stuff, right? Whether it be my spiritual wellness or my mental wellness or my emotional wellness or my financial wellness or my physical wellness, right? That list goes on. Whether it be any of those parts, travel pours into them. And so if traveling is your thing, you're going to be traveling in a well experience. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is that you've got an entire contingency of people who are saying, and when I travel, I want to travel with purpose, right? And so what we mean by that is traveling with purpose. I'm going to a wellness retreat. I'm going to go to a silent yoga retreat. I'm going to go to a place that brings me to a meditative, peaceful state. That also is considered wellness travel, right? So when people use the term wellness travel, I think that we are moving and shifting between both of these different ways of viewing it, all of it with the same end goal, that we are going to feel better, that we are going to come out of it renewed, restored, and that we are going to be headed in a maybe a different direction than where we were originally.
Yes, and that can mean different things for different people, because I think sometimes when people hear that term wellness, they think, oh, I'm going on a diet, I'm going to be limited
right.
on what
that's
I
right.
can do. You know, everyone's going to be sitting around meditating, and that's not really what I want to get out of my travel experience. So I'm glad you talked about some of those other things, because everybody doesn't look at wellness the same way.
That's right. I mean, if you ask my dad is saying, look, well, travel for me looks like I'm eating whatever I want to eat. And no, I'm not walking around because I am busy bee in my everyday life. Well, for me looks like I'm eating everything I want. I'm probably having a million margaritas, but I am sitting on that beach, taking in all that vitamin D, and leaving all the things that I don't want to be thinking about right now, I'm leaving that either at the hotel room or either, you know, at the border, right? Whereas for me, wellness looks like I'm going and I want to stick my head in the sand and I don't want to do anything else. I don't want your excursions. I don't want your alcohol. I don't want to be eating a bunch of random stuff that's going to give me a bellyache, right? Like, I don't want any of that. What I want is to hear my son laughing on the beach. My biggest complaint to be that sunburn I just got, right? Like, those are the types of things. I want to get through a book finally, where I am really, really picking up some stuff that I've been really yearning to learn about. And so, like I said, that wellness travel looks so different. And that's why I led with whatever well looks like to you. Only the individual knows what they are going through. Only they know what they're experiencing and their bodies, right? And so the question is like, how are you feeling? How's your body feeling? Not every country is going to promote well travel. I just came back from the Dominican Republic, and I would 100% recommend that place as a place that could potentially be well. Why? Because if you want to be busy, you could be busy. But if you don't want to be busy, they got a lot of pristine, beautiful beaches to do nothing, right? I would also say Barbados is another one of those places. Beautiful beaches, beautiful people, a little warmer, right? And so like if your well is tied to the climate or the environment and you're like, but I hate hot weather, maybe Barbados is not for you. Maybe you're going into the hills in Colorado during the winter and that's going to be your thing, right? Maybe you're taking a ski kind of trip or something. But for me, as a person who literally travels to go find the maximum vitamin D I can, that's going to be a place for me. So I really do think that people have to think about their preferences. They have to think about what they feel like they're in need of in that moment, right? Maybe if financial wellness is your thing, you're saying, look, I want to travel, but I'm not getting ready to go spend, you know, drop all sorts of money. Like, I need a place that's a staycation where I can dictate what that budget starts to look like. And maybe I don't need to be out of the country, but I do want to be somewhere else that's not my immediate home, right? And so maybe that's what their wellness also looks like, is getting out of the hustle bustle of the city or leaving the mountains, because maybe the mountains is also not the thing for them right now, and going into a polar opposite environment that's going to actually inspire, you know, their minds, bodies, and souls to do the work it needs to do for itself.
Yeah, there was another term that people have been using a lot over the last few years, and that is self-care. Because I think the other thing that we saw with COVID is that if we're not taking care of ourselves, anything like that can really, for lack of a better term, just kind of take you out. So you have to kind of build that good
That's right.
foundation for yourself and really pay
That's
attention to
right.
your body, your mind, and all of those, and really just have that self-care. It's not selfish to do that. I think that was the other thing that we really had to realize is that taking care of yourself is not being selfish. Just like with the airline spiel that we all get, you put your own oxygen mask on first. You
That's
can't
right.
take.
And it took me a long time to understand that because I'm like, what? My maternal instinct is no, but my baby needs to breathe first, And the truth is like, right, okay, get the oxygen on the baby, but if you pass out or if you perish, the baby is without a parent. And so, getting my mind to wrap around what they really meant when they were saying that is a really powerful thing because I am someone that propagates wellness all the time. And even as a wellness practitioner, I have had to sit myself down and say, Rahima, you pour into people all the time. You are constantly pouring into even all these other areas of your wellness. But what's the area that you're not pouring in because you're always strapped for time? Physical well-being, right? And so you've got some people like myself who's constantly in the weeds all the time and not setting aside that time to work my body out, right? My body requires a working out. Otherwise, stress levels are increasing. The weight gain will end up giving you high blood pressure, all these things, right? So, like, you can be well in all those other seven areas, but the minute that you allow for one of these areas to slip, you will not feel as well as you're supposed to feel or that you can feel. Some people are in the best shape of their lives, but then they are dealing with internal stuff or they are dealing with mind things, right? So, on the surface, you say, wow, look at those abs, right? Like, or wow, that person looks awesome. And then you say to yourself, oh, but wait a second, that's one area of wellness, but there might be other areas of wellness that they need to work on, like maybe their finances, or maybe their emotional and spiritual, right? Or their connectedness to the environment or to the universe. And so the other thing that I'll say there is that, again, only the individual knows what areas they need to really be honing in on, but all of those things can be possible through travel. And that is the reason why I talk about travel wellness, travel as being wellness, is because from my vantage point, all of those areas could be worked on as you are on the road. So anyway, so it's just been very powerful both to see how the environment has shifted over the last few years, also to see more people traveling, because the other thing that's been really taking people down in the last few years, if I can just say, Javon, is the mental wellness and well-being. People aren't able to contextualize as well. People aren't able to plan as well because the future looks a little some kind of way for a lot of us, right? People are dealing with things at work. So occupational wellness is not okay. Therefore, the mental wellness is not okay. And so thinking about what do you need? Do you need to be stimulated by other things? Do you need to go learn about another environment? Do you need to put yourself in another environment so that you can gain perspective? What does your mind need in order for you to be okay? And I find that traveling hits all those buckets.
What are you finding that is trending in that wellness travel space?
I'm finding a lot of people looking for retreats, a lot of them. And so the biggest request that we are getting is people who want to sit down and they want to go through a process, but they don't necessarily want it to be the gimmicky stuff, right? Like, I'm not going to Thailand to go do some Tai Chi, and that's what this retreat is about. Just meditation, just Tai Chi. These guys are actively asking for life coaching. A lot of our retreat has looked like us sitting down and doing one-on-one coaching to figure out what else do you need now that you're here. So come, because we're going to take you through a process of self-reflection. We're going to force the issue of journaling by journaling to very prescribed sets of questions that are going to start to get your mind, your heart, your spirit moving, right? And get you on a bit of a journey. But then we're also going to do one-to-one coaching with you because we already know that once you start to open up Pandora's box, you've got to give people a roadmap or work with them to co-create a map so that we can get them back to where they need to be so that they can start to move forward in the directions that they'd like to go in. And as an add bonus, we then go have some fun together and build community, right? And so what we have seen is people are really, really lacking on the social wellness. They miss people. They don't know how to interact with people. A lot of folks are missing those words to be able to bridge with new people because COVID put us out for a while, right? Like the pandemic had us sitting at home, unable to be in each other's bubbles, right? And so we lost a lot of our vocabulary. We lost a lot of our ability to sort of interact with people that we don't know necessarily without the level of discomfort that's now present. Our extroverts became super extroverts. Our introverts are feeling a little extrovertedness because they don't know where to start. So the retreat format allows for people to enter into a safer space where there's a distraction because there's work that the individual has to do, but there's also already prescribed community engagement and fun that's waiting. So it takes the need for you to think about it, the need for you to build out what that looks like, all that pressure, it takes away from you. So we are certainly seeing people wanting to do more intentional work around life coaching, career coaching. And sometimes even when we're in the midst of retreats, you know, sometimes we've had to say, oh, wait a second, I got to call in reinforcement because this is mental health. This is not the mental wellness that we are prescribed to do. This is mental health. Like I need to now call in other people who have formalized backgrounds that work with people who are on spectrums, going through massive depressions, who are in PTSD zone. And so that's been new also, is witnessing people raise their hand and say, I know I need to get in a space where I can focus on me. I need to get away from my house to block out all the noise, right? Because some of us got kids and dogs and partners and all the things. And I need a disciplined space that's going to take me through that journey. But then some people raise their hands and don't realize that once they start talking and the tears start going or the emotions start to swell, that actually what they've been in need of all along is something that they haven't up until this point been able to name, which is like the need for additional support, psychologists, therapists, or otherwise, right? And so there's been a lot of spiritual healing that has been very present in this space, and that's been awesome.
Yeah, and I had said this to a friend of mine not too long ago that, you know, the pandemic, we can say it's over. It kind of never was over. It just kind of like we just moved on and just started doing things. And I'm like, you know what? We're not okay. I'm just seeing a lot of my interactions with people that I know and people that I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's very different today. Like, that's, oh my right. goodness, what is happening? When it comes down to even customer service, and I travel a lot, so it's not just here in the United States. It's globally as well that I'm finding that many people are really struggling with, as you mentioned earlier, communication, but I think also feelings and interactions and really just some things that were under the surface that I think have bubbled up for a lot of people, and they really just don't know how to handle that. So I love the idea of whatever that is going to be for you. So if you feel like you need something to get you on the right path of financial wellness, that you can then look for a retreat or something that will help you in that sense. And I even saw something the other day that people are going on vacation just to sleep.
That's right.
They're not getting enough sleep. So it's just so many different ways in which you can look at that. It is a broad term, but it's not something that's just going to be about health and physical, which I think a lot of people think about.
There is no boundaries on that, right? Only you can say, in order for me to feel okay, I need to take this break to go sleep, right? When we were in the Dominican Republic, my father and I were just reflecting on that. We went three different generations, my dad, my son, myself. And literally, we were only there for 8.5 days, right? We slept like babies. And that is because we didn't have to get up for work. That is because we gave ourselves permission and said, listen, everything goes on this vacation. Whatever you need is what you're doing. So if grandpa says, I don't want to see y'all today, that's for his wellness. He don't have to see us today. And if Malik says, I'm going to that water park because I need to be in the environment and all that good stuff, then that's Malik's wellness. If mom says she's getting another sunburn, because listen, Javon, I stay getting these sunburns, okay? If I'm getting another sunburn, that is my wellness. And Malik can go to the teens club. Grandpa can go stay in his room. Everybody can get what they need. But the one thing that we all came back saying is we cannot get the same type of sleep we got while we were gone.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are sleep deprived, self included. I'm putting myself in that bucket, and it does feel extremely wonderful not to have to get up and say, you know what, I'm just going to sleep in for another hour or 2 hours, or even if you just want to get up and have breakfast and come back and take a nap somewhere else. But for me, my day has to have a really good massage, and
I love that
really helps relax me, and also from those long trips, right? Your muscles just get tight and you just realize how tense you are. And every massage therapist I have, this is really sad, but I'm on the computer a lot, so they all go immediately to my shoulders, like, what is going on with your shoulders?
Right.
Like, I know. And that knot has been there long before you. So I don't know if it's going to come out today, because they all want to get that knot out, right?
That's right.
Like, let it go.
That's right. Look, deal with it a little bit, but I need you not to hurt me, okay? I don't want to walk out of here sore because you think you're going to be the one. It has taken me a lifetime to build this up. I love to hear you say that, though, right? Because sometimes that is what wellness looks like. I need a massage no matter where I go. For my son, he wants to take a 2-hour bath every day, everywhere he is. Now, nobody understands it. Everybody is like, why does your son insist on bringing or finding bath bombs or bubbles in every country he's in? He could have been at the pool all day. He could have been in the ocean all day. And literally, it is clockwork. He gets in that room, Siobhan, and he is turning on that hot water, and he is building out a bath, putting his TV in there, grabbing his cold water, and you will not see this guy for the next 2 hours. He does it at home. He does it while he's traveling. And the one thing I tell people all the time is, my child is a Cancer, so he is a water creature. And when he tells you that that water brings him wellness, he's not playing. So we don't mess with him in the bath, like we're not messing with Javon's massages.
Well, yeah, and that's his private time. I mean, you could be in the pool, but that's not private, you know?
That's
so
right.
It's some private time. I love that energy. I love his energy. So what are some of the hot destinations? I know you mentioned a couple that you just experienced recently, but what are some of the hot destinations that people are going to for wellness?
So I mentioned Barbados. Barbados has such energy that I actually moved there and lived there for 2 years. And I had never done that a day in my life. Javon, I went and sold everything. I was like, I'm out. I'm going to go sit on that island. I'm sitting there until I don't need to be there no more. Because they have a lot of healing energy in the water. So Barbados is certainly a place that I would advise any and everybody. I'll say this time and time again. Some of the other places people are going, of course, people are going to Thailand. Thailand is real known for a lot of, you know, Buddhist energy, very calm, collected energy. And so you're seeing a lot of people going into the, you know, Chiang Mai, or even folks who don't want the noise are going into Phuket. So you're seeing a lot of that going on also. I'm also seeing a lot of folks are playing around with places like St. Lucia and Antigua. So a lot of the places that we continue to see are places where people are saying they're environments that are slowing things down. Right. Part of the reason I love the Dominican Republic is that they're not moving at the speed of lightning there. So it literally is about the places around the world where the way in which people are experiencing time is just extremely slow. Would I tell you to go to Japan for wellness? Absolutely not. Japan is hustle bustle. There's a lot of cars going on. If you like mountains, maybe you could go into the mountains there the same way that you could do in some of these other regions around the world. I'm not a mountain person, and so I tend to attract people who are looking for sun, who are looking for ocean, who are looking for easygoing, slow pace.
I do know that they do have this hustle and bustle, especially when you're talking about Tokyo and Osaka.
That's right.
Those major cities. Absolutely.
And I love that you said that, because most people, you know, Japan is synonymous for Osaka and Tokyo and places like that, right? And so when you talk about the forest bathing and the hot springs and stuff, I mean, absolutely, right? But the question is, and this is for the average person who's traveling, right? Is my wellness also tied into how far my trip has got to be?
Yeah.
Right? Because when I go 16 hours, I'm unwell, period. Let's be clear. As much as I love to see these other corridors in the world, my wellness is wrapped directly into how long am I traveling? my mind will not get off that fixation, right? Like, how far did I have to go to get the thing? Because then I know that on my way back home, I'll be fixated on that again. And by the time I get home, I'm going to need another trip from that trip. So for me and my wellness, for example, that actually matters. Again, like when we talk about the wellness thing, there are a couple of questions people should ask themselves. What am I trying to get out of it? How far do I want to go? Is food an issue? One of my biggest qualms with Barbados is as much healing energy as that country has, the food is a little subpar for me. I'm a seasonings girl. I love a lot of seasoning. That's why the Dominican Republic works for me. So when I had to make a list of my new top three places, it literally was me looking and saying, how hot was it? How were the people? How was the food? How was the accommodation? Was it too busy? What was the climate like? Is there a lot of pollution?
Thank you so much for joining me today with all of the information and how to really look at wellness travel beyond just what the words are themselves. How can someone follow you or get more information?
So we've got the BeWell 365 website. So www.bewell365.com. And then we've got the BeWell 365 Instagram.
Fantastic. Well, again, Rakia, thank you so much for joining me. It was such a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you for having me, Devon.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you head on over to the website. It's travelingculturati.com. And when you're there, you can peruse, but don't forget to join the travel club because we go to some fantastic places. This is the Culture Report. Culture is forever changing and reflecting what's happening in the society and with its people. It can be born of the arts, music, food, and sometimes politics and strife. This is the Culture Report. Chatting with me today is Susan Whiting, chair on the board of the Women's History Museum. Hello, Susan, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hello, Javon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, absolutely. And I was super excited. I do have to ask a question, though, because years ago, I was in Dallas, and actually for the show, I specifically went to Dallas and visited the Women's Museum in Dallas. Is there any affiliation after they closed?
That's a great question. No, there is not. But what you've pointed out is the fact that we need to have a museum, or many museums and many organizations that focus on women's contributions to American history. But after that closed, the National Women's History Museum, I think simultaneously, was working in Washington, D.C. to do a similar thing. And really starting with moving a very famous statue of the three women suffrage leaders into the Capitol Rotunda to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment. They said, we really need more than a statue, we need a place. And they began a long process of fundraising and lobbying to build a museum in Washington, D.C. that would represent women's accomplishments. And so in that process, because it was long, they built a very practical website to gather biographies and to put together exhibits and to provide a resource for everybody who was looking for women's stories and women's contributions to American history, and then began a set of different kinds of events called Women Making History in both Los Angeles and in Washington, D.C. to focus on some of those women, people you might know and people you really didn't. Think of the hidden figures kind of stories with Katherine Johnson. They were really ahead of their time, if you think about it, and providing resources that people could access all over the country. And so right now, the National Women's History Museum is the leading cultural institution for women's history by doing this online and by having biographies and virtual exhibits and special panel discussions and all kinds of programming from book clubs to cultural events and music online. But we always have wanted to have also a place where people could gather. And COVID slowed that down a little bit, but really excited to tell you, and the timing is perfect, that we have just opened our first physical exhibit at the Martin Luther King Jr. Library in Washington, D.C. That is Washington, D.C.'s central library, and it's a beautiful Mies van der Rohe building. And we opened an exhibit called We Who Believe in Freedom, Black Feminists, D.C., and it is an exhibit focusing particularly on 10 women, but it really covers 20 women who lived in D.C., whose lives and work over the last 100 years not only affected people in Washington, D.C. and Black women, but actually all women, and in fact, all of us in the United States through some of the groundbreaking work they did in civil rights and in the arts and in all kinds of things that created legal positions that actually have had a much larger impact beyond Washington, D.C. So that exhibit is free. It's in the library. So we add that to our virtual.
Absolutely. And we didn't establish that in the beginning, that the National Women's History Museum is an online museum right now. But as you said, it's in the works of developing a brick and mortar. But of course, those things take time. And I'm glad that there is at least that presence online. But if you can say for me, what makes it an online museum versus a website?
So the difference is we actually have curators and historians and educators on our staff and in our advisors who curate exhibits. So they are online exhibits. So it might be on women in sports and include everything from the history of Title IX, all kinds of figures back in time. But they're curated just as an exhibit that you would see as you walked into a physical location. And we have virtual field trips that we do for schools. We produce educational material for teachers, lesson plans, et cetera. So it has both the historical and academic background around specific exhibits. We also do have some small collections. And for example, at this new exhibit, there's also a very interesting, powerful piece of art that is called the Glass Ceiling Breaker sculpture. And it is a glass portrait of Vice President Kamala Harris by a Swiss artist, Simon Berger. And it is actually very, very large, but it's shattered glass that really is her portrait. And it was all about her shattering the glass ceiling. So that is actually in the same space the new exhibit is that you can go in and visit at the library. And we have a very different idea about how to be in a physical space than some other museums.
And so I can only imagine that starting with the online presence and then parlaying that into some physical spaces and or items is probably a very different thing. And it sounds like there's much more intention and thought about that than it would be on the reverse, that we have a physical space and we need a website that will represent that and provide people with that information. And I want to go back to your first exhibit and physical space that you were speaking about. What was the idea about that particular exhibit to be the first?
That's a great question. So COVID changed so many of us and the way we think about everything from work and our lives and everything else. And as we have this very strong digital presence, we have over 5 million visitors to our website. It's very well attended from all over the country and the world, actually. But we did want a place. And what we started to think about was we wanted really to be in a community center, in a place where it was accessible to everybody and inviting. And at the same time, the Martin Luther King Jr. Library had just been renovated. It is the central library. It's in a fantastic location in Washington, D.C. for visitors and for residents. And they needed not-for-profit groups to come in and help them fill the space. And we thought, well, here's a perfect match. And so we became the museum in residence at the library, which has everything from storytelling areas and podcast spaces to auditoriums and places to hold meetings and panels. And so because it is the Martin Luther King Jr. Library, and it's a very special building for that reason, and because we are the National Women's History Museum, we said this exhibit must be about Black women. And when we started to really pull back, we realized no one had done an exhibit about Black women feminists. And so that really started our two curators, Dr. Sherry Randolph and Dr. Kendra Field, who are already experts in this area, into their work with scholars from all over the country to build this exhibit, which has women whose names you probably have not heard of, but others you might have, like Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, who is alive and is working very hard today. And so that's why we picked the topic. That's why we're in that location. And the idea is to actually take this model and go to other cities and working in collaboration with organizations in other cities, you know, put on different exhibits that highlight women who you do not know, who have national and local impact.
That's awesome. And I think that it's really giving you that, as its name suggests, that national appeal. And by having this online presence first as a museum, being able to have those installments in other places. And yes, I do know who Eleanor Holmes Norton is because I'm originally from Washington, D.C.
So right.
Yes. So it is a name that's very familiar to me. And I hadn't really thought of it. I am an African-American woman and, of course, followed a lot of Black history, but not really thinking about it in the lane of Black feminism, because so much of the work that African-Americans have done for equal justice and women as well has always been that collective kind of effort and not specifically in a feminist lane. And although I know there have been times throughout history, as you said, the story just hadn't been told. I also saw on your website, I thought was very interesting, as an upcoming event, the Brave Girls Virtual Story Time, Brianna Marches Through Time. Very interesting. Tell us about that.
Yes, we've been having a great time, really, with the book. We call them ours. This started during COVID because we were used to producing programs, obviously, digitally. But so many people needed resources for homeschooling, adults who were at home who really needed something else to think about and learn. So we started producing Brave Girl Story Hour and getting different authors to read their books or others to read those books. And this is another thing where in collaboration with libraries, we can really do a lot. So we can live stream a book hour in a library, but we can also have the author reading. So that's been very popular, but we do that for adult books too. So there are other programs as well.
Again, let's give the website and certainly membership information because all museums need that.
We are the National Women's History Museum. Our website is womenshistory.org, and you can join as a member for $35. Just come explore. You don't have to be a member to use the website. We are totally privately funded, so it's always helpful when people want to support us, and every single dollar goes toward the programming. So I'm just so pleased that you've allowed us to describe what we do. And you're right, for us, women's history is every day, not just in the month of March. So it's great to be talking about this.
Susan, thank you so much for joining me today. Looking forward to perusing more.
Thank you very much. It was our pleasure.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information. Ladies